White Aryan Resistance calling. White Aryan Resistance calling. This is the White Aryan Resistance Radio Network. Your host for today's show is Tom Metzger, Terrible Tommy. So get a spot of tea, sit down and relax, because it's time for another show on the White Aryan Resistance Radio Network.
And this is your buddy, Big Quiet, your big buddy Tom Metzger. Terrible Tommy in the bunker right here in North Central. What the hell's going on here? My computer's interfering with my speech. Anyhow, Terrible Tommy here in the bunker, North Central Indiana, and it is the 5th of July, 2016. And thank goodness, thank Odin, 4th of July crap is all over with and done. The third was when it was the worst. It really got bad around here. But I must say, on the 4th, my neighbor across the street took it very easy. Not too much of the big boom stuff, and he was done at 10 o'clock. So that was good. I'm not going to be out there to cut off all 4th of July fireworks, but I certainly am wanting to get rid of this military front, the siege of Okinawa and something like that out here every year. And we are at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. And it's time to get your donations in for the show. I had to cut a couple of people off this month. You know, I let them go for a while, but after it goes too far, I have to let them go. Well, it's too bad because there's a lot of things they need to know, and we've got the information. We've already got some of your donations in already, so that's good. The earlier, the better. I don't push and you know, ask every day, every minute, like Alex Jones. Somebody sent me an email and said, what do you think of Alex Jones? He said this and he said that. I said, Alex Jones is a con man. Oh, sure, he mixes up some of the truth with a lot of lies and things he's dreamed up in his addled head. But he's a psychopath, just like all these other guys that think they know it all. And he doesn't know it. Not only does he not know it all, he spreads a lot of misinformation. So if you want him, you can have him. But he's too conservative for me. And when I say conservative, I shouldn't say conservative, because none of these conservatives that have airtime are conservatives at all. They're not really trying to conserve our race. That's the most important thing. And if you don't want to talk about race, and you don't want to talk about money and credit and banks, you might as well just not talk about anything at all. It's a waste of time. Now let's start this thing off right. Don't ever make a deal with the cops or the feds. Let me tell you a sad story here. On Andrew Sadik's 20th birthday, North Dakota police made him an offer. Moonlight as a confidential informant, in other words, a snitch, and avoid rotting in prison. It was November 2013, and Sadik had never been in trouble before. Months earlier, he had sold a small amount of pot, $20 and $60 worth, to a narc at his school, the North Dakota State College of Science. Sadik was in the crosshairs of the local task force, which searched his dorm room and found a plastic grinder with marijuana residue. A day later, he was in an interrogation room with Richland County Sheriff's Deputy Jason Weber. Weber warned the baby-faced student he was facing 40 years in prison and a $40,000 fine for peddling weed on the campus. $20 or maybe $60 worth. That's how bad these sons of bitches are. And they are sons of bitches. Obviously, you're probably not going to get 40 years, but it's a good possibility you're going to get prison time if you don't help yourself out. Yeah, there is, Weber said during the recorded interview. Quote, that's probably not a way to start off your young adult life and career, right? Said the snitch. Said the cops. What I'm going to ask you to do is to do some buys for me. In other words, contribute to crime. Then, depending upon how you do, a lot of this could go away, Weber added. A frightened sadic swore not to tell a soul about the undercover ops. He never spoke to his parents or a lawyer. He was encouraged to ferret out dealers and heavy drugs on his own. Footage of the interview shows. The video was released to the local media last year under open records requests. 6 months later, Sadik turned up dead. Authorities pulled his body bound to a backpack full of rocks from the Red River. There was a bullet hole in his head. Police tried to tell his parents, John and Tammy Sadik, he committed suicide. Tammy Sadik told the Daily Beast. 2 years later, the Sadiks still have no answers about how their son died, but they believe he was murdered as a result of an informant gig. On Monday, the family filed a wrongful death suit against Richland County and Deputy Weber, who helmed the dangerous operation as part of the Southeast Multi-County Agency Narcotics Task Force, or SEMCA. Now remember, boys and girls, they do this all over the country, all the time. When reached by phone, Weber declined to comment. His attorney, who also represents Richland County, also refused to speak. Tammy Sadek says has waited for details of her son's undercover buys and still hopes the same deputies who recruited him will nab his killer. That's why we're forced into this lawsuit. A lawsuit is not the North Dakota way, but this is our last grasp at hoping to get some answers, Tammy Sadik told the Daily Beast. We're not a sue-happy state. A man's word means something here in North Dakota, she added. We trust that the people are going to honor our word. We trust the police. Well, that's your first mistake. It just didn't happen in this case. And it doesn't happen in many cases. Yeah. The Sadiks have asked the FBI to take over the case. You mean the famous but incompetent, which is being probed by Minnesota and North Dakota authorities. Famous but incompetent, the same guys that fucked up the 9/11 situation. The same guys that are going to do their part to get Hillary, the bitch, off the hook. Tammy Sadik is also working with a Republican state lawmaker on legislation to protect informants and reduce marijuana penalties in North Dakota. That's the wrong way to go about it. Legislation to protect informants? Wow. There should be nobody be an informant for the state. If they can't figure it out, that's their problem. Before Andrew Sadek died, he was attending the Wahpeton College on an electrician scholarship, weeks shy of graduating from a two-year program. He planned to return for a third year so he could become a master electrician. Sadek was known for winning state vocational skills competition. His mother said he was shy and giving, a hard worker who tended to his family cattle ranch and with his father and late brother helped build their home. Well, you see, this don't make any difference. These people still have confidence in their government. They still after all this, will have at least a certain amount of confidence in their government, instead of saying, I don't have any confidence anymore in so-called government, because it's not government, it's organized crime. Probably the cops were in on the take. They were probably splitting up the money with the drug dealers. And you wait and see, probably some cop's going to be indicted down the road someplace. That wasn't bad enough. His brother Nicholas died at the age of 18 when a train struck his truck in 2005. If they didn't have bad luck, they wouldn't have any luck at all. My voice is weak today. I went out and burned a bunch of undergrowth today, big bonfire. I got a lot of heat and smoke. I think that's what happened, so that's what happens when you play with the big boys. Well, we all know what a rat Hillary is and what Bill is and all those other people that surround them. But I'm not going to leave Donald Trump off the hook, because I think he's not good for us. And what I'm going to do, I'm going to play for you an interview with a man who went to Donald Trump University and invested quite a bit of money and lost his ass, and you can decide for yourself. You see, you can't be that big a guy with that much money without playing footsies with the Jews. You cannot. You cannot exist in New York City without playing ball with the Jews. And here he is. He's now claiming his best friends are Jews, and they probably are. Now his daughter's married to a Jew. And there you go, right on down the line. So I'm not going to vote. And I won't vote for Hillary, of course, and I won't vote for Donald Trump, because I do believe he's a con and he was put into this race to save the Republican base. That's what I think. Because the Republican Party was losing registrations by the thousands. The Republican Party was on the ropes. They had plenty of money, but they were losing foot soldiers. They needed somebody to invigorate the party as far as registration is concerned, and that's when they brought Trump on. The things he's doing now in trying to run this campaign, or not run this campaign, he is not doing it. And it gives you a little more insight into his thinking and where he's really coming from. I want you to hear this guy that lost all this money. But there were plenty of others, too, that lost their ass, too. I know how this stuff works because Liberty Lobby and Willis Cardo used to play this game. Back in the 70s, he was selling silver, and he had a man, I don't remember the man's name now, but he was a fast talker, a big talker. He went all over the country using Liberty Lobby and Willis Cardo as his backers, selling silver to the regular people, the working people. He had one in Fallbrook, California meeting. I went to it and listened to it. To me, I could spot a con. I'm just suspicious of everything. You got to know me. I'm suspicious of everything. Well, a whole bunch of people, including a very good friend of mine, lost a lot of money buying on silver at the wrong time. But he was, of course, promised he's going to win big, but he didn't. He lost his ass. That was way back in the 70s, and they continue to do that kind of crap all the way up to the present time, and there's still plenty of con men in the right wing. It's one of the easiest places to con people. I'm sorry, boys and girls, but there's a lot of people in the right wing that are easy to con, and they're conned over and over and over again. And I'm talking about the racial part of the right wing, too, you know. But they do hang around conservative meetings and all that kind of right-wing meetings. But they love it. They con them all the time. They love little old ladies and take their money.
Of course, had their marriages ruined. And, you know, I was hurt by this money. For example, I normally buy a car, and now I'm renting a car for $230 a month rather than buying it. And I had to have my roof fixed, and I waited quite a while to do that, and that was about a $20,000 job. So it hurt me. It hurt me financially, and it hurt me because I was embarrassed, because as soon as I paid the money, I got on the railroad, and I was telling all my fellow commuters how I was going to make a lot of money. I went to the Chase Bank here in Manhasset, and I asked them how I could open up a business account, and I was all set to do everything. And I had been in the business of organizing corporations for attorneys for over 28 years, and I knew that in New York State, in order to use the term university or college, you had to get permission from the Department of Education and the Board of Regents to do that. And what I found out later was that when I requested documents from the Department of State, that they erroneously filed the Certificate of Limited Liability for Trump University without getting the approval of the Department of Education. And it took the Department of Education years before they finally could get Trump and his associates to change the name of the limited liability company to Trump Entrepreneur Initiative.
So when you were in the midst of it and obviously realizing that it was a scam, were you talking with some of the others who had put money down? Were you all discussing it and saying, boy, this is a real scam?
Well, I really didn't have to talk to anybody, because I knew from the first moment that I heard that, you guys can get some information on deductions on IRS.gov or Trulia.com, and all of these websites were readily available to everybody. And I did hear from some of the people that they were not satisfied with this three-day in-the-field mentorship program. And a gentleman by the name of Stephen Gilpin kept trying to get us to take the program, and I kept saying to him, why would I want to take a three-day in-the-field mentorship program with you when I still haven't formed a limited liability company and I haven't taken all of these retreats? Later, I found out from the documents on file with the courts that all of these mentors that were giving the three-day in-the-field mentorship were getting $5,000, $4,000, and that's why he kept hounding me.
Wow. They were getting a cut every time they got you to fork over more money.
And it turned out that James Harris had no experience in real estate whatsoever. If you look at the documents that are on file with the Attorney General's office and with the New York State Supreme Court, he's a motivational speaker.
Wow.
He was. And he got paid commission for every $35,000 that he collected.
That's another way of saying he was a scam artist.
I wouldn't go as far as to say that, because I wouldn't want to be sued by Jason.
Well, he didn't have any experience in real estate.
No.
When did you say, okay, I've got to get my money back?
As a matter of fact, I waited until the 12-month membership was over, and in the meantime, I was getting copies of documents from everybody that complained to the Attorney General of New York, to the Department of State, and to the Department of Education. And finally, on August 10th of 2011, I sent a letter to George A. Soreal, who is the Managing Director of International Development and Assistant General Counsel at the Trump Organization. I found his name in the papers. And I demanded a refund, which in total was $35,995 between my sons and mine. And all of these sessions were recorded, and I got a call back once I sent out the letter from a Mark Covey, who said to me that he wanted to, my son and I to take this three-day in-the-field mentorship to complete our education at Trump University.
Oh, my God.
And that they were going to give me the best instructor that they had. So I said, "Nope, Mark." I said, "I know I've been scammed. I just want my money back." And lo and behold, a few days later, I got a call from George A. Soriel.
And when was this approximately?
I sent out the letter on August 10th of 2011, so it probably would have been within 2 weeks of that.
Right.
And my conversation with George Soriel was very interesting because he said to me, "Well, if you really thought that this was a university, what kind of a degree did you expect?" So I said, "I didn't expect a degree." I said, "New York University offers non-credit real estate courses. They have about 500 of them. And at the end of each course, you get a certificate." And I expected that Trump University was going to be even better than New York University, and that's why I paid for this program. And he said, "Well, I'm not giving you your refund." And then I subsequently wrote him a letter on September 12th, and I said that if he didn't give me back my money, and then I wrote him another letter on September 20th of 2011, and I said, "Okay, I gave you time, and now I'm going to file a complaint with the Attorney General of New York," which is what I did.
And then you became part of the lawsuit.
It's an action by the Attorney General on behalf of the people of New York. And we're not plaintiffs. The plaintiff in New York is the people of New York, whereas in California, by virtue of the fact that we enrolled in Trump University, we are members of a class action. And the attorneys in California told me that the trial is going to start in August of this year and that I am on the witness list.
So there it's a class action suit. In New York, it is a complaint through the Attorney General's office, I guess an investigation now of Trump University by the Attorney General.
It's more than an investigation. The New York Court of Appeals ruled, I believe, last month that the Attorney General could go forward with his action. And one of the things that happened was that originally the lower court decided that most of the people that had complained were not allowed to proceed because they were time barred by the 3-year statute of limitation for civil fraud. However, the Supreme Court ruled with the Attorney General, and there's another section of the civil practice law and rules which allows the Attorney General to act on behalf of the people of New York for a period of 6 years. So that's what's being, they're going to have a conference with the judge in the New York State Supreme Court, Manhattan branch, and that subsequently, hopefully, will come to trial. Of course, Donald Trump's attorney are appealing it to the highest court in New York.
I'm curious about what, if you hadn't been, somebody went to Trump University, been scammed by it, I'm curious what you would have thought seeing all this happening with Donald Trump. You know, obviously he said a lot of things that have offended a lot of people, but at least early on, would you have thought, gee, he might make a good president?
Personally, no.
Okay.
I thought he was a good businessman, obviously, since I invested in his casinos and hotels as a stockholder. And then he went bankrupt. But he seemed to recover from everything that he did. But as far as the being the president of the United States, if I had not known anything about Trump University, I still wouldn't have thought that he was a qualified candidate.
And what do you say to those now, obviously, since your experience, who say they're supporting Trump for president?
Well, I would say to them that Bob Geo has been trumped by Trump, duped by the Donald, and the Donald is doing the same thing to everybody around the country because the situation in the United States is so bad that nothing is happening between the president and Congress. But I can understand why these people are falling for his line. But believe me, it's everything that he's saying is not going to happen. It's just more and more empty promises, the same promises that he gave all of us at Trump University. And anybody can look at their computer, and they can see everything that he said in his ads for Trump University. But the problem is that Trump University is hardly known in New York State, let alone New York City. How can we expect the people all over the United States to really investigate what's going on and find out what Trump is really doing as a presidential candidate?
Well, I want to thank you for coming and speaking with us about it, and certainly bringing your story to lots of people, because they really need to hear it. Thanks so much.
You're welcome, Mike, and goodbye now.
Bob Gio is a man who lives on Long Island and spent $36,000 almost on Trump University classes, and now is part of complaints and lawsuits against him. We're back in a few minutes.
Now, the only way you can figure these things out is get information from both sides of the fence. I analyze the stuff coming from the left-wing progressives, and I analyze the stuff coming from the right-wing conservatives. I beat it together, and usually I can figure something that's pretty plausible of what's really going on. If you try to do it any other way, you'll get nowhere. Beauty of it is the progressives are just thrilled to death to tear the shit out of the conservatives, and the conservatives are just thrilled to death to tear the shit out of the progressives. But in their research and stuff, a lot of times they come up with true stuff. A lot of lies, but also true stuff. And that's the only way you can stay on reasonably on top of this whole damn mess. But I hope you see. Now, what I'd like for you to do, since there's not a lot of money around, you've got all these right-wing racial people out there, and they're all jumping up and down for Trump. And, of course, Duke's in there with that deal, too. Why am I not surprised? And they're going to give quite a bit of money. Now, they may not give big lumps of money. However, I do know some people that have given pretty big lumps and wasted their money before, so I'm sure they'll do it again. I want you to contact as many of those people that are getting all excited about Trump and tell them, no, don't vote for Hillary, but don't vote for Trump either. Stay out of it. Keep your money in your pocket. And if I'm right and you see that I'm telling you the truth, I want them to send some money to our operation so we can do bigger things here. We have some bigger things we'd like to do, but we can't possibly do it on the income that we have coming in. We're never going to be a super big outfit because there's too many division situations. Now, you know, obviously, if someone's a real super Christian, they get upset with me because Jesus never existed. Or religion's a fake, religion's a fraud. Most of those people don't want to contribute. And those people that believe in privatization and the conservative thing and the predatory capitalism or capitalism and think they're capitalists, they're going to get pissed off at the stuff I say. And they're not going to want to give any money. And when I say all the candidates are crooks or psychopaths, some worse than others, that's going to offend a whole lot of people that people like some people in the right-wing racial cause, they can get that money by just keeping their mouth shut about religion, keeping their mouth shut about how rotten the Republican Party is, and things like that. And then there's the Hitlerites that believe Hitler did almost everything right, and he didn't screw up. And the death of 55 million people, mostly white, had nothing to do with him. When I expose that kind of stuff, that doesn't make me a lot of friends in the right wing who have adopted Uncle Adolf as their stepfather. And the people who poo-poo global warming, I'm telling you, I've come around to the point where I believe in a certain type of global warming. And that's going to make a lot of people unhappy. And then there's the anti-abortion people, which I say there's nothing much you can do about abortion. If if people want to use abortion, they're going to do it, whether it's on a dark alley or whether it's done in a hospital. So for the religious right to keep yapping about abortion, even though I'm very upset about white girls getting abortions of beautiful white babies that should be adopted off. But these people are anti-abortion because of their religious position, not because of their racial position. They believe that we got every one of these little beings that's born has got some type of a thing called a soul. And that soul, we got to save that soul to go to heaven and kneel at the throne of Yahweh God, which is, as far as I'm concerned, ridiculous. That's the reason why they're so anti-abortion. Whereas I'm anti-white abortion simply because of the physical situation and genetics. And we've got the racial right-wingers who think war is great and can't wait to get over there and kill some Muslims, things like that. They're not happy with me either, because as far as I'm concerned, it should be made a crime to ship weapons to any of these countries so they can go out and kill each other, cut off their weapons. The United States makes billions, trillions off weapons sales. So does Israel, so does France, so does Germany, and all the so-called Western countries. Which they don't call white Western countries. They don't say white at all. So those kind of people don't like Terrible Tommy, don't like to send him any money, that's for sure. So I've sort of painted myself in the corner that to tell the truth as much as I can all the time, you can't win. You just have to do your little thing and let the chips fall where they may. I'm also one of those guys that believe in developing other forms of energy as much as possible. Now, it's not going to happen overnight, but it should. And when they say they can't do it with various means that are not toxic, they're lying to you. They just don't want to lose the money. A lot of big shots going to lose a lot of money, and they got to figure a way of transferring over to other forms of energy and not lose their money in the process. Then there's those people who believe my country right or wrong. Well, I don't believe that. I have no loyalty to a criminal government. And I have no loyalty to a criminal government that sends troops into other countries to occupy, kill, and so forth. So if that makes me unpatriotic, that's it. I'm unpatriotic. Most of the right-wing racists would support a federal government. They just want to change the names of the people involved. I don't support a central federal government any more than some of our founding fathers. We shouldn't have one. We should have the states. Maximum would be the states. That's the only way you can keep any control at all on what's going on politically and financially. Because once they got the federal thing installed, then came the central banks. And once the central banks take over or get involved, you have no freedom at all. You're kidding yourself. Just like over there in Europe right now, and of course in England, we got the City of London, the big central bank over there. And we got the big central banks over there in the EU, and they're all jockeying for position. But believe me, they'll figure a way where they come out on top and you still come out on the bottom. England cannot be free and have a lot of liberty as long as the banks control the economy, especially the crooked banks. I advocate executing bankers, crooked bankers, and pretty much crooked goes along with bankers. because they're allowed to create money out of nothing. That's all they do, is create money out of nothing and then loan it out to you, that credit. Not hard currency, credit. Not gold, credit. It's just money that's created on paper. And you're a slave to it. I'm a slave to it, but I'm not as much a slave maybe as you are. But we're still slaves to credit. It's magic. It's amazing. But it works. And that's why 1 to 2% of the people in the world control everything. People are too cowardly to rise up and lop their heads off. It takes too much work. Slavery takes a lot too much work as far as I'm concerned. Like all those black slaves that were on the plantation, out of those hundreds of slaves, in most cases, why wasn't there one slave that could just sneak into the big house, the big capitalist planter's house, and cut his throat? That may have happened once in a while, but not much. Blacks complained about their problems back then, but there were ways of solving that problem. And also, for the white working class to give them the knife to go in there and cut the planter's throat. Slavery caused the pauperization, and the poor class of whites in the South with no education and hardly any schools or anything, propertyless people that were in some ways worse off than the blacks. At least blacks had a guaranteed food three times a day. They had a guaranteed place to sleep and live, and they were protected from people outside the plantation coming in and doing harm to them. But that wasn't the case with the white working man in the South. He didn't have any of that protection. Just remember, when we give all these other races hell, and many times they deserve it because some of the things they do, we owe our most firm hatred to the leaders of our own race that have betrayed us. Treason to the race, all the way down the line. Go as far back as you want. And you're being sold out and betrayed by the leaders, the kings, the queens, the congressmen, the senators. These were white people. And when you go raising hell about the Jews all the time, the Jews simply got in on a good deal. They looked at what the white treasonous non-Jews were doing, said, well, we want part of that. So they got into the act. How stupid could we be? So don't look for much to change over there in England, because he who controls the money controls everything. What will happen now is everything will get worse, because they're going to try to privatize more and more. They're trying to privatize almost everything. And when they get a complete control of the things that they're privatizing, then you're really going to be a slave. So don't forget, tell some of those guys out there in the right wing that about the race situation. But also just straight right wingers, say, save your money, because you're going to be very embarrassed at the end of this presidential campaign, especially if you give them money. So give me some of the money and I'll get a lot more done with it than they could ever do. I'm getting ads on my computer from the Trump people now that they need me. They call me by my name, Tom. We need you. We know you're out there. Help us. I will never contribute money to a billionaire. I didn't do it when Perot won, because he was one of those guys that had $9 billion. He said he felt my pain. Nobody with that much money feels your pain at all. So forget about Trump feeling your pain. Almost everything he says is not going to happen. It's not going to happen, even if he wins. All you Dukeites out there and all you right-wing so-called racists out there, you're going to say, that goddamn Metzger, he's a traitor, he's screwing us, he's really against us. Donald Trump, he's a he's a real hero, and he's a wonderful guy, and he's going to lead us out of the valley into the sunshine. Wait and see who gets the last laugh.
Attention, people. There's big news out of Washington. Representative Paul Ryan, the Republican Speaker of the House, has announced that he has an idea. This is news because the GOP leadership has not offered an idea in years. Instead, they've simply been the party of no, opposing all proposals put forward by Democrats and nixing everything that big majorities of us commoners want Congress to act on, like a jobs program to repair America's collapsing infrastructure and raising the minimum wage above the poverty level. So we were excited when Speaker Ryan called a major press conference to present his idea for fixing the economy. But sheesh, it's a rehash of the same old stale idea the GOP has for every issue. The elimination of government protections for consumers, workers, our environment, and so forth, so corporate profiteers can run roughshod over us. That's the sole idea in the highly hyped 57-page economic agenda that Ryan is peddling like a snake oil salesman. His fix is to roll back hundreds of important regulations that restrain corporate rapaciousness. For example, he wants to free Wall Street bankers, for-profit colleges, cable giants, and others from rules that prevent them from ripping off and otherwise harming consumers. His plan also repeals, quote, all climate change regulations under the Clean Air Act, a sweet favor for big coal and electric utilities. Ryan would even cancel ethics rules that require retirement advisors to act in their clients' best interests rather than taking kickbacks for persuading clients to put their savings in bad investments. This is Jim Hightower saying, by calling these rank corporate giveaways, quote, an economic agenda, Ryan himself is committing a shameful, immoral fraud against the American people. His plan would fix our economy in the same way a veterinarian fixes your dog.
Well, now let's go into religion. I've stepped on almost all the toes here. Start our first lesson on religion. Well, let's go way back while we're at it. Start way back there. And meanwhile, Cynthia, sitting here at the desk with her bikini on, will talk to you.
At first glance, the Egyptian pantheon presents a bewildering array of gods having little in common with the Christian godmen. But properly understood, many Egyptian deities were city or regional variations on a theme, gods whose fortunes rose or fell with the outcome of human power struggles and dynastic change. Triumphant priests merged useful aspects of a fallen rival's deity with their own favored god. This process of absorption, assimilation, and adaptation continued throughout the Greek, Roman, and Christian eras. Though the basic Christ legend was formulated by apostate Jews, with their expectations of a conquering Messiah, and pagan converts, with their fables of dying/reborn sun gods, Egypt provided Christianity with ideas not found in the Old Testament: immortality of the soul, judgment of the dead, reward and punishment, a triune God. The ancient religion of Egypt infused the nascent faith of Christ with much of its creed, conjuring up Christianity. Following the breakup of the Empire of Alexander the Great, his general Ptolemy, 323 to 282 BC, took possession of Egypt, Palestine, and Cyprus. Alexandria, his capital, built on a spit of land unaffected by Nile floods between Lake Mareotis and the Mediterranean, traded the wealth of Egypt with the Greek world to the north and east. The great port became the hub of commerce between Europe, Asia, India, and beyond. Settlers arrived from more ancient Greek cities, bringing Hellenic culture with them. Ptolemy himself encouraged artists and scholars from all nations to continue their work in his cosmopolitan city and, with royal patronage, Alexandria became the intellectual capital of the ancient world. A new syncretic culture emerged. Along with the trade goods into Alexandria flowed every philosophy and creed known in that part of the world. Into this most cosmopolitan of cities, religions mingled and mixed and borrowed freely from the ancient faith of Egypt itself. Accessible even today, the catacombs of Alexandria graphically illustrate the cultural fusion of the Roman-era Greek sarcophagi, guarded by Egyptian gods, in Roman military uniform. Asyncretic tradition. The Greeks create a universal god. The Greek general Ptolemy styled himself as an Egyptian pharaoh and took the title Soter, savior. As the astute ruler, he understood the political value of an official religion. A single, composite deity, one god, one all-embracing system of belief, might unify the diverse, often antagonistic peoples of his polyglot empire and strengthen their devotion to the god's earthly representative himself. The first Greek pharaoh wanted a single, composite god to bring together his diverse subjects. In a classic example of the process of syncretism, the character and characteristics of several earlier gods were rolled into one, the god Serapis. Of all the pharaonic Greek gods, Serapis survived the longest, well into the Roman period. Infusing the character of so many earlier gods into Serapis, the practice of virtual monotheism was established in Alexandria over several hundred years. The new god embodied aspects of many earlier deities, including the Egyptian Osiris and Apis and the Greek Dionysus and Hades, the Greek god of the underworld. The Ptolemies intended that the new god should have universal appeal in an increasingly cosmopolitan country. In consequence, Serapis had more than 200 localized names, including, according to correspondence of Emperor Hadrian, Christ. In the 3rd century BC, the worship of Serapis became a state-sponsored cult throughout Egypt. With the Roman conquest, the cult spread throughout the empire. Such a god, to enjoy universal acceptance and devotion, would necessarily possess all the powers and aspects of earlier ones. To create that grand synthesis in a process that anticipated the actions of the Roman Emperor Constantine several centuries later, Ptolemy put all the resources of the state behind the promotion and sponsorship of an official cult. Major temples of the god were built at Alexandria and Memphis. The Serapeum in Alexandria itself blended Egyptian gigantism with the grace and beauty of Hellenic style. The Serapeum grew into a vast complex, one of the grandest monuments of pagan civilization.
And that's your first lesson of the Christ myth. And we'll put one of these in every other day or so till you hear the whole thing and begin to realize you don't need some spook in the sky to run your life. You just need yourself. Well, let's see what our good buddy Max is doing on the economy. I don't know whether he's in Britain today or in the United States. Let's check in.
Hi, I'm Max Kaiser. This is the Kaiser Report. Oh my God, Brexit. You know what it is? You got to understand it in the following context. It's the UK version of Katrina. Remember the Katrina disaster? Well, this is what we have in the UK. The government had no preparations. The government is scrambling. They have no idea what to do, and the entire UK government is in meltdown. It's delicious. Stacey.
Yeah, it's quite extraordinary that they knew the disaster was coming. And yet, once the Brexit disaster happened, it seems like everybody's just sitting around going, what do we do now? Everybody across the board. So that's,
you know, what's incredible is that the markets actually knew that this was coming because the hedge funds were manipulating the betting markets and the bookies to make it look like stay was ahead. They were using £2 or 3 million, and that stay or remain vote, according to the bookies, they kept saying, Remain is in the lead. But those were the hedge funds who were manipulating those results. As we report on this show many times, those bookies' results are manipulated. Meanwhile, they're making incredible bets on the Leave campaign in the futures market. One hedge fund, O'Day is his name?
Crispin O'Day. Yeah.
Crispin O'Day. He made £200 million manipulating these markets openly. And, of course, Cameron never bothered to look at these markets. Then when the whole thing crashed, he had no ability to understand that the poll that was being conducted on the government website to have a rerun of the Brexit was manipulated by 4chan. The government has absolutely no idea what they're doing. This is the Katrina disaster of the UK.
Okay. Now, I want to point out that we are in Washington, D.C. This is why you see a different studio here and you see the White House and, the Capitol and all these other buildings behind us. I want to say this is my first time here, remarkably, and the White House is quite small. I thought, most people only ever see it in photographs, always behind some presenter. And it's actually a lot smaller in person.
Well, TV has 10 pounds, doesn't it? In this case, it had a 10 bedrooms.
Indeed. So let's continue on this whole Brexit fallout story, because many bankers are quite happy with the fallout because they get coddled by the central banks. And the headline reads, NERP absurdity soars after Brexit. Hits $11.7 trillion. NERP is negative interest rates. And, well, the amount of government bonds that sport negative yields, an all-too-real absurdity where bondholders, in effect, are shanghaied into paying the government for the privilege of lending it money, has soared 12.5% after the Brexit vote, from $10.4 trillion at the end of May to $11.7 trillion as of June 27th.
Right. So the purpose of negative interest rates is to dissuade people from savings. It's having the complete opposite effect. People are running into gold. They're running into silver. They're running into Bitcoin. So that policy is a complete failure. The central banks, however, are providing a huge moral hazard cushion. After Brexit failed to restore any economic sanity whatsoever, central banks opened up their books. They loaned into existence another £1 trillion worth of funny money to keep these banks in existence. People are saying, look, oh, the markets have recovered the day after. Of course they recovered, because the central banks are buying assets in the open market, hand over fist, £1 trillion at a time. And those people who voted to leave because they were going to get sovereignty, they just basically put themselves into more central bank prisons.
Hey, who predicted that markets would do a V-shaped recovery? Right here on Kaiser Report.
Well, the pattern is that you have inequality, which leads to a revolt, which leads to a crash, which leads to central bank policy making more funds available, which leads to more inequality. That's the cycle of inequality. It's happening on a global basis. The global insurrection against banker occupation has now hit the UK in a big way. When all these groups come together, we're talking about a global insurrection. Hundreds of millions of people rising up simultaneously with the pitchforks, going to the central banks and flaying the legs of Janet Yellen inch by inch in the public square. And then, who knows from there, maybe a torch.
Okay, well, JGBs account for about two-thirds of all negative-yielding sovereign bonds. Those are Japanese government bonds. The action was in longer-dated bonds with maturities of 7 years and over. Those with negative yields soared to $2.635 trillion, up 62% from the end of May and up 93% from the end of April, so having nearly doubled in 2 months.
We got these public school boys like Boris Johnson and Gove. Michael Gove?
Michael.
Okay.
Yeah.
And also, you know, Osborne and Cameron. They all went to school together. Now Osborne and now Boris Johnson has abdicated his role. He's not running for the leadership anymore. They're all playing games with each other, and they're throwing the country onto a bonfire of central bank non-sovereignty. And the central banks and the hedge funds and the big banks are laughing at the British government and the British people, who are saying, oh, we're free of the EU now. Oh, we're free. Oh, but I have to therefore be imprisoned by Bank of England, Mark Carney, ever more so.
Well, I have to say it's a bigger freak show than even America. It's for the first time ever I've seen the news is actually covering the situation in the UK extensively, and people in the restaurant are talking about it. So that says a lot that you're a bigger freak show than what's happening in America.
Yeah, it's a total freak show in the UK. See, the thing about the UK is that it's generally too small for US media to cover. It's too insignificant. And then we know from experience that you can't cover the UK from within the UK domestically, because the regulators are censorship prone. The censorship in the UK is the strictest in the world. Free speech does not exist there. If you try to talk about the UK in the UK, the regulators will come down on you hard, as we've had that experience.
Okay, so let's talk about the story about negative interest rate policy as a result of Brexit. So the 40-year yield has ranged today from 0.075% to 0.112% for debt that matures in 40 years, exclamation point. Given the current monetary policies, the BOJ has loaded up its balance sheet with 426 trillion yen of securities, or a mind-blowing 85% of GDP, and has no way of stopping it without throwing Japan into a horrible debt crisis. Well, given these policies, there's practically no chance that the yen in its current form will have not blown up by then. But investors don't care. Of course, investors are the Bank of Japan. That is the only investor. They are buying from all the banks and hedge funds that are dumping this.
Yeah, Bank of Japan is buying stocks in the open market. They're buying ETFs, exchange-traded funds. They're buying bonds. They're buying sovereign bonds. They're buying kimonos. They're buying kimono dragons. They're buying sushi. They're buying used teen underwear.
That's
from
true.
Vending machines.
Yes.
As a way to stimulate the economy and keep themselves amused, those perverts over there at the Bank of Japan.
Well, we actually have a story about the Japanese consumers buying safes. They're not...
They're buying safes. They're hoarding gold. They're buying silver. They're buying Bitcoin because the central banks have gone rogue.
Yes.
They've gone wacko. They're out of control. They're buying everything at any price for any reason whatsoever to keep the balance sheet of the banks from imploding. Remember, HSBC, Lloyds, Barclays, and the other one are insolvent. They're technically insolvent. J.P. Morgan, Goldman Sachs, technically insolvent. Citibank, technically insolvent. The only way to keep them alive is that these central banks are buying trillions of dollars with their own garbage paper. Once this thing blows, we're talking about a total massive financial collapse, and the global insurrection begins in earnest.
Okay, the negative rates, of course, Japan is leading the way. In theory, the Bank of Japan's negative interest rate policy should be spurring consumers to spend, but the hottest selling item right now is a safe, which nervous savers are using to hoard their yen. Nobody wants to...
And bluefin tuna.
Yeah.
You buy a refrigerator safe, you put bluefin tuna, and then when the bluefin tuna becomes extinct, as they are becoming extinct, you can resell that bluefin tuna to a sushi shop and make triple your money.
So who's benefiting from the negative interest rate policy?
Well, Japanese sex bots
are extremely
popular now. My solution to ISIS is you parachute in there 1,000, 2,000, 10,000 of these sophisticated Japanese sex bots. Those guys will be totally distracted for ages, and your terrorism problem is completely cured.
So let's look at who's actually benefiting in the financial markets from these negative-yielding bonds and who's benefiting. Well, what does this mean for investors that bought bonds with long maturities years ago? For example, the German 4.75% Bund issued in 2008 and due in July 2040 trades at 202.3 cents on the euro, having doubled its value over the past 8 years. The sellers of those bonds are true beneficiaries of Draghi's monetary policies, and they can sell them right to the ECB. But this is the hedge funds. It's not the pension funds. It's not the insurance companies because of the structure of their, you know, how they have to match their liabilities with their asset sheets.
Right. Pensions have a statutory obligation to fulfill certain regulatory requirements. The hedge funds play regulatory arbitrage. They do an end run around all these statutes, and they drain the system of capital. Then they put that money in chateaus in Switzerland and artwork in France, and you never see it again. And the wealth and income gap widens. There's a crisis. They print more money, and the cycle goes around again.
The insurance companies and the pension funds have to hold these debts to maturity, these bonds to maturity, so they lose money. They're the ones losing money. It's being siphoned off and given to hedge funds.
Pensioners and workers have no lobbying representation in Washington. Here we are in Washington, D.C. I can tell you right now that workers and pension funds have no lobbying representation whatsoever. I'm talking about this Obama cash money. There's nobody lobbying in there for this, for the savers, for the pensioners. What happens when you have, let's say, taxation without representation? Huh, that sounds like a familiar refrain. Oh, that's right. The whole country revolted and Brexited from the English Empire. Okay, we need a new Brexit. We need a new exit from Washington, D.C., who refuses to have any lobbying representation for workers and pensioners.
Okay, well,
workers are here in this room. You're not being represented.
Now, we don't have workers anymore. We have financial systems and debts. So let's look at another story about, essentially, it matches this negative interest rate policy, because negative interest rates are policy is basically caused by the central bank buying the government's debt. So they're consuming their own debt. There's another situation happening, and that is companies buying their own debt as well, buying their own shares, issuing debt, and buying their shares. Well, futures spike after banks unveil tens of billions in buybacks. So this was post-Brexit, and the banks, of course, fell up to 22-30%. And what did they do? They issued a whole bunch of debt to buy back their shares. Markets rallied. Bank of America did a $5 billion buyback. Citigroup planned $8.6 billion. J.P. Morgan, $10.6 billion. Morgan Stanley, $3.5 billion. Goldman Sachs, you see, everybody's doing it, and the market
rallied.
They're
all doing it the same day. It's total collusion. And it means that, essentially, here's the bottom line. The big banking industry and the S&P 500, the Dow Jones, markets around the world are being taken private. for private interests. There will be no publicly traded markets whatsoever in 5 to 10 years at this current rate of 0% interest rates. That means that you will not have any ability to participate in the equity growth of the country in which you live, which means you are an indentured servant. The prison industrial complex is coming for you. Where's Obama on that? I tried to talk to him the other day. Went over to the White House. I said, Obama, I got to talk to this guy. But the prison industrial complex is coming for everyone, and they wouldn't let me in. I mean, I'm Max Kaiser. I got to show you. What? I couldn't get an appointment with Obama? Well, I'm a citizen. I'm a taxpayer. What's up with this country?
So finally, wrapping this all up regarding this story from NERP Absurdity, it seems everything that happens in the world, Brexit is just another event in a long list of such events, pumps up the prices of government bonds and pushes down their yields as frazzled central bankers resort to lowering rates even further and buying even more bonds to counteract the very forces that their harebrained scorched earth policies have unleashed. And as investors no longer know where to turn to in a landscape where nearly all assets are ludicrously overpriced and infested with risks, and no one knows how to back out of it without blowing up the whole system.
Well said. On that note, we must take a break. Stay tuned for the second half.
You know, I got to counting on my fingers and toes, but then I had to go over and count on the fingers and toes of my lady to figure out how long I've been at this. And it turns out I've been at it for at least 52 years. I kept saying 40. I've been at this for 52 years, and I started out with conservative interest in the money system. So I didn't start out with racism. I started out with the money system. And I have scads of books on the money system and the fake criminal money system that I have on my shelves, still have. I used to give some lectures. I was even invited to give lecture to a big Liberty Lobby session. I forget where that was, Washington, I guess. But then I also got into the racial idea a little later. That came along in about 65 or 6 or 7, along in there when Wallace ran. Well, no, Barry Goldwater ran. But that wasn't a racial deal either. But then when Wallace started out, I wasn't a racist, but I liked Wallace. So when anybody says, you don't know what you're talking about, boy. How long you been into this? Probably about twice as old as you. 52 years. So I should know something. And Max really puts it out there. And I told you about the central banks. And it's all the scam of the money. And the central banks. And until people finally figure that out, you can't straighten out the racial issue either unless you straighten out the finance issue. That's for sure. You just can't do it. So it's going to call for a worldwide insurrection. That might not totally do the job, but I think it'd be a good start, knowing what we know now, or what a lot of us know and have known for a long time, for several decades. There's no way out but insurrection. I could use another word, but I might get the FBI beating on my door. The famous but incompetent. The ones who couldn't figure out any criminal acts by Hillary Clinton. Oh, man. Well, I'm going to get out of here, people. Okay, we'll have some beer over at the restaurant. Come on over at the restaurant. Bring your money with you. I need the money. I'll be back tomorrow. Terrible Tommy right here. Yeah, good to see you, Mort. Yeah. Whoa! What the hell is this?
It's knowing that your door is always open and your path's free to walk.
Well, that's Elvis. That's a good song to leave on. I gotta go out and burn some more rubbish. Try not to asphyxiate myself.
That keeps you in the back roads by the rivers of my memory. It keeps you riveted on my mind.
And I sing that one.
It's not clinging to the rocks that I've been made over.
Waving from the back door by the rivers of my